Luke. Luke. Ben? You will listen to the Wampa's Lair podcast. Podcast? There you will hear your hosts, Carl LeClaire and Jason Hunt, as they discuss all things Star Wars. So join the conversation and hang out. Oh, and watch out for Wampas.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This is episode number 182, Musical Finales. I am, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me, we have the Max Rebo to my figuring Dan. We have Carl LeClaire.
Jason, you might have a group of model nodes, but I have the niftiest 360-degree piano in all the land. And I'm cute and cuddly, and I look like a blue elephant. It's amazing.
Yes, that is true.
I'm playing with my Max Rebo toy as we speak.
Of course you are.
Oh, I love Max Rebo. Oh, Jason, today this episode is going to be channeling our inner David Collins. I need to try harder to get him on the show because the dude is an absolute genius. We are talking about the finale music of every Star Wars film. Hopefully, if we start going a little long, we might have to break this into a two-part episode. So,
bear with us.
But we really want to. There's so much to dig your teeth into in each of these closing tracks of the Star Wars soundtracks. So we really want to dive into that. And while we are no David W. Collins from Star Wars Oxygen, we're going to still give it our go anyway.
Yes.
And I will say that this is coming at a great time because tomorrow night I am going to the Boston Pops to watch John Williams live in concert conducting the Pops with the first ever premiere of the Star Wars Force Awakens music. Now, granted, I know he's conducted it a couple other places. He's already done it in Philly, but I think he's on like a mini tour, if you will, right now, and Boston is his home base to begin with, so I think it's going to be a great time tomorrow. I cannot wait.
And I can't wait to hear about it, so yeah. I'm super jealous.
Yeah, I'd be jealous of me, too, if I wasn't gonna. I mean, I'll be honest. I'm so pumped. I really hope I get a chance. I was telling you before, Jason, I'm going to do whatever I can to meet this guy. If come hell or high water, I really want to just shake John Williams' hand. And I'll be like, hey, that's cool, baby. Excuse me, Mr. Williams, can you record a quick introduction for my Star Wars podcast? Yeah, that's cool, baby. Oh, man.
But that, Jason, would be amazing.
Before we get into all these musical nodes, we had a pretty misunderstood matchup.
I think so.
Left over from last. Who gave? Did you? You came up with this, correct?
Joe came up with this.
Joe Hogan. No wonder it's stupid. No, that's right. Joe was on obviously our last episode last week, and as always, we invite our guests to come up with a matchup. And Joe made a really good point, and I think it was really overlooked. The Joe's point was this is Imperial Academy Han Solo, so not Han Solo in A New Hope, not Han Solo. You know, like in his glory days, it's Han Solo in the Imperial Academy, which, by the way, the only source material we have of that is pretty much next to nothing. We get a tiny bit of it in the Han Solo trilogy by A.C. Crispin. Other than that, that's not a lot to work with. But that particular Han Solo against TR...
FN-2199 or TR-8R as Traitor.
Traitor!
As people called him.
Yes. But Jason, it's a bloodbath, if you will.
Yes. On Facebook, we got quite a few responses, and since we have a fun topic and we don't know exactly how long it's going to go, I'm just going to speed through these real quick. Adam J. Taylor gives it to Han. Ian Statsny also gives it to Han. Francisco Tudela gives it to Han. A lot of these people are giving us Han in the very Indiana Jones fashion from Raiders of the Lost Ark. Paul Gann also gives it to Han. Ian Rauletta, Han. Stephen Jones gives it to FN-2199. Jeffrey Fishbach, Han. Jeffrey Beaumont, Han. Mark Young, Han. Claire Young, definitely Han, Indiana style. Kyle Taylor, Han. Travis Fritsch, Han, Brian Jesnes, Han, Thomas Davis, Han Solo. Michael Morris says, well, to keep things from being too one-sided, I'll go with Admiral Akbar. Matt McCandless, Han, easily. Brandon Lyons, hey, Brandon, I know you. Says Han shoots first. And then on Twitter, at Bradley Wall, says it's a hard one. If it's hand-to-hand, he'd give it to FN2199. If it's blaster, he would give it to Han. And since FN2199 needs some help, I gave that one to him. At Dewey the Mailman gives it to Han. At KingOg9Qubits, of course, gives it to Han with the hashtag HanShotFirst. And then an email from Ethan gives it to Han because he would be able to outwit the trooper. So that gives us a final Larian tally of 18 for young Han Solo, 2 for FN2199, and 1 for Admiral Akbar. What say you, Carl?
I'm going to give it to Admiral Akbar, too.
Okay.
I'm kidding. If you've been listening to the show, you know Han Solo is my favorite Star Wars character. But I'm not giving it to Han Solo because here's the reality. Here's the reality. And I think this was just so overlooked. Because this is not the Han Solo that we all love, who's like totally a master with his blaster, like a total great combat genius. This is a young Han Solo coming out of an Imperial Academy that produced the likes of the stormtroopers we see in Rebels. Like, their marksmanship awards probably aren't that hard to achieve. So, you know, Han certainly becomes one of the greatest marksmen in the galaxy. But that comes with a lot of time, patience, and experience. This young Han Solo, being a product of the Imperial Academy, is not going to compare to a product of the First Order Academy. And we see that on screen. You know, we see how, I mean, we're told the type of regimented training they get from birth. You know, TR Adar is totally going to house that young Han Solo. And I'm not saying that. Like, it's going to be close. He would crush Han. And, like, I love Han Solo. It pains me to say this, but I think that's just the honest truth. A First Order, you know, trooper who's debatably whether even not he's right out of the academy or not against a young Han Solo right out of the academy, no comparison. First Order has better trained troops. So I'm giving it to TR Adar.
Yeah.
Sorry, Han. I miss you. I love you.
Well... I'm going to go with the majority on this. I'm going to say Han Solo, and here is why. I feel like Han is probably the kid going through the academy who was always getting into trouble because he never did things the academy's way. He was always doing things his way, which is why he ended up leaving. Of course, this is all still legend speculation, history for Han. We don't have an actual history for Han quite yet. Maybe we'll get some of that with the young Han Solo movie, which just cast its actor, an unknown, which I like. I like the fact that we cast an unknown, not someone who we're all like, oh, yes, we can say yes or no about this actor.
I was really hoping they'd cast Jake Lloyd.
Yeah.
Poor Jake.
I'm saying Han because I feel like he's going to be the guy that got in trouble because he was doing things his way, not the academy's way. And the only reason they passed him is because he was too good to not pass. So I feel like, you know, and I'm basing this on my experience of Han Solo from the Legends universe at this point. And given his dumb Solo luck, I feel like you could drop a moon on him and he'd still survive. Legends reference for you.
Yes.
but yeah, I'm going to give it to Han as well. So that gives us a final tally of 19 for Han Solo, 3 for FN2199, a.k.a. Traitor, and 1 for Admiral Akbar.
That's great.
I was seriously tempted to actually give a vote to Admiral Akbar.
We should have just given it to Max Rebo, both of us.
Yes. Well, we've got a great poll for you lined up at the end of this episode.
Indeed, we do.
And I'm curious to see what you guys think. But let's just jump into this topic. I'm so excited about this.
Let's do it, Jason. There is something to be said. So, you know, for all of these closing tracks in the Star Wars films have, you know, in a way, it's almost like it's a, you know, we have the actual film track, right? Like the closing song from the movie while the movie's going on. And then obviously every single track then begins, you know, rolls into credits with the same, you know, Star Wars fanfare. But then John Williams lines up for him what are the themes of the film. And usually they're concert suites and concert themes for each of these films. But I think it's important because, in a way, I think it's almost like John Williams is summarizing the film musically.
Yeah, recapping the story.
Exactly, in about anywhere between 5 and 10 minutes.
Yes.
He's going to give us that emotional experience of the film recapsulated. Because, again, we've heard all of this music during the film through different parts, different scenes, but here he is kind of putting it all together as a concert movement, which is just absolutely stunning because nobody can do it like John Williams, as we all know. And Jason, I know this is one of your favorites.
Yes.
And obviously we're just going to go sequentially here, starting with episode one and the great Municipal Band. Yeah.
Okay, well, we're not going to play the whole piece of music before we talk about it.
Yeah, because we'll never. It might as well. That'd be one episode in and of itself.
Exactly. But I love Augie's Grand Municipal Band. Everyone here should know that by now. It's so much fun. It's so upbeat and bouncy and innocent sounding. But as I discovered when listening to David Collins talk about it on Star Wars Oxygen, the kids' choir portion of it is almost an inverted and upbeat version of the Emperor's theme.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of creepy when you think about it.
Right. And again, we should probably preface this the whole show by just saying, again, if you don't listen to Star Wars Oxygen and Rebel Force Radio, just stop this show now and go catch up and then come back. No, but right.
Almost.
Don't actually, because there's 30 episodes, so it'll be a while till we hear from you again. But anyway, you know, but yeah, David Collins obviously also has this guy is a trained musician. He obviously has a natural talent for it. He always has that keyboard right alongside him so he can play the themes as well. I am not that musically inclined or that technologically savvy either. But again,
me neither.
So don't expect that from us, because we just unfortunately can't give you that. But yeah, like you said, Jason, he does. He points out that the choir piece there is an inverted version of the Emperor's theme. Mm-hmm. And again, I would have never known that had I not heard that from him.
Right.
Because I can't pick up on different musical. I'm not that musically inclined to be able to pick up like when something's in a different key or just it's played in a different order. To me, it just sounds totally different. But it does, right? Like you said, it's kind of this fun, light song, and it's to celebrate this victory. But little do we know that the song itself is subtly hiding the Phantom Menace.
Exactly.
There is this lurking evil even in the midst of this celebration. So again, what knowing that tidbit of information tells you so much more about the song.
Yes. But on the surface of it, I thoroughly enjoy it. It's so much fun. You know, Carl starts playing it and the two of us start dancing in our chairs here, to be perfectly honest. It's exciting. It's fun. It's upbeat, and you just can't help but move to it. And you can see why the Gungans like playing it and dancing to it as they're marching down the street. But I love it. It fits great with the celebration that's going on screen as well. So that's wonderful.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. And again, to me, it's using the fact that it's kind of Palpatine's theme hidden there. It's indicating that this big victory we just won, it's a lie.
Right.
It's not forever.
Exactly. And of course, he's standing there watching everything with everyone else. So
play pawns.
Exactly.
But obviously, like we all know, that then the ending credits begin with the same blast of the Star Wars fanfare. Not going to talk about that for every track because it's the same.
Right.
Again, I'm sure there are subtle differences. I don't know that I'd be able to pick up on them, but Because I know they're all different recordings, but it's essentially the same piece of music. But then again, now we settle into what are the themes of this particular movie, and I got two. Is that what you had, or did you have more than two?
Yes. Yeah, I picked up two of them. So, of course, after the revamped poppy version of the main theme, which plays in every credit sequence, we go into Duel of the Fates. Which is, of course, not only arguably the standout track from The Phantom Menace, even though it's got a lot of those, it's also one of the more important ones to John Williams, so much so that he includes it here in the finale sequence for The Phantom Menace. And I think it's not only great musically to listen to again in more of a concert setting than what we had heard throughout the film, but it's also great storytelling because, as you said, John Williams sort of recaps musically the story that we just got finished watching during the credits. And that's one of the more dynamic and impactful things from this film is the fact that we've had this big good versus evil confrontation. The Sith have returned and the Jedi have to figure out what to do about that. And we had the tragedy of Qui-Gon's death involved in all of that. And while it's this big epic sounding piece that we all love, it does have a bit of a melancholy, not melancholy, but a slightly tragic feel to it. And of course we get that. Not only is it obviously up front with the death of Qui-Gon, but we also get the beginnings of what will ultimately be the downfall of the Republic and the Jedi Order.
Mm. Yeah, and I think the Duel of the Fates song itself is kind of just it's a black and white good versus evil type track. You know, I don't think it carries the weight of something like Battle of the Heroes, which we'll get to in a little bit. But yep. You know, which is more personal. This is just kind of more thematic.
Yes.
And it is. It does have that epic feel. I mean, again, it had a music video, second ever Star Wars movie, a song to have a music video after Lap Your Neck, of course. Mm-hmm. And I think that's exactly it. John Williams is pointing out that there is now this epic struggle again. The Sith have reemerged. There's this good versus evil struggle that has returned to this galaxy. So in a sense, almost like, you know, the story before this, whatever, it was a peacetime for 1,000 years. But now something has arisen again, and Duel of the Fates is indicative of that. And it reminds us, even at the end of this film, even though there was a victory, there is still the Phantom Menace. You know, it's such a perfect title for that movie. And it really is. Duel of the Fates kind of reminds us of that. But then we roll into the second theme that, you know, John Williams highlights, and it's one of my favorite pieces of music in Star Wars, and it's Anakin's theme.
Yeah.
And you know, Anakin is going to be the focus of this original saga of the first six films. But what's so perfect about the Anakin theme for Episode One is, again, we've used this word a million times when talking about Phantom Menace, Jason, but it's innocent.
Yes.
You know, there is such a beautiful feeling of innocence in that track. You know, and it really does. It connects with you. And there's something childlike about the song itself. It's peaceful, it's kind of fun, not overly fun, but it's very peaceful, and it does have a sense of joy to it. But more than anything, it has a sense of innocence
right
to that piece. And of course, in the concert piece itself, and even if you listen to Anakin's theme on the soundtrack, is its own track. But he does this obviously at the end of the film, is he perfectly kind of sways Anakin's theme into the Imperial March.
At the very end, yeah.
At the very end.
It's innocent. It sort of depicts this young character, this chosen one, which is another important key moment, part of the Phantom Menace that he wants to highlight. But he also gives us a quick little hint as to what is to come with this young man. Right. You know, he's innocent, he's good, he's got good intentions now, but there's this underlying sense of foreboding,
right,
when it comes to his future,
right,
and John Williams just hints at that just enough. And of course, as Star Wars fans who devour this music and listen to it dozens and dozens of times to get every little hint and detail out of it. We all know this. But if you're not overly familiar with the music, it's like, wait, was that the Imperial March there in the middle of it, at the end there?
Is that Darth Vader's song? Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're exactly right. You know, John Williams is obviously putting in there. I mean, anybody, even if you're not a big Star Wars fan, everybody knows who Anakin becomes. I mean, it's such a huge part of pop culture. Mm-hmm. But that's exactly it. I mean, he puts it in very subtly. But again, it's the way that he links it to this innocent theme. But again, John Williams is showing us what we're going to see in the next couple of films, is we're going to see this innocent young kid become a terror of the galaxy. So here, I'm just going to play that quick little clip of how he does that. You can hear this at the end. So he kind of, you know, again, just really subtly puts it in there. It's not a menacing sounding Imperial March by any means. But it's there to link us to Anakin's future and Anakin's destiny.
Right.
So.
Yeah. It's interesting how tonally it still fits with Anakin's theme.
It does. Yeah. Well, and it's obviously clear that when John Williams composed Anakin's theme, he purposely, you know, gave it that sense of tonality. And if you remember, Jason, at the end of The Phantom Menace, if you stuck around through the end of the credits,
you heard Darth Vader breathing.
Exactly. So Ben Burtt gets a say in there at the end of the movie as well. So yeah, you get this slight Imperial March, and then you even get Darth Vader's breathing. So it's pretty obvious Anakin's future.
Yes, indeed. Well, I guess we get to talk about Attack of the Clones next.
Oh yeah, you like that movie a lot too, I know.
I do like this movie a lot. And of course, the end track here starts a little bit farther out than most Star Wars movies.
It almost adds like a combative version of the Force theme.
Yeah, and it's interesting because that first chunk there is actually played during the duel with Dooku at the end of it,
right,
when Yoda has to grab the pillar and hold it, you know, keep it from falling on Anakin and Obi-Wan, and then it goes into slightly Across the Stars when Padme shows up, and then goes back into what we just heard there. As it all wraps up. But then we get the very angelic chorus sounding when Dooku emerges and lands on Coruscant, which is very interesting that he plays this very angelic sounding music as we have the Sith Lords meeting.
Yeah.
And our first actual glimpse of Darth Sidious in Attack of the Clones. Our only glimpse of Darth Sidious in Attack of the Clones. Yeah. And then, of course, it continues on into the rest of the finale of Attack of the Clones, in which we get a couple of other things, but most notably, we get a very militaristic and upbeat version of the Imperial March as we see the clones head out, and then that transitions into one of the most, you know, sweeping big statements of Across the Stars in the entire movie.
Yeah. I want to stop real quick about that angelic stuff. Because I actually just was catching up on Oxygen the other day. Apparently that piece of music it's on the Phantom Menace soundtrack, but it's not in the movie. And it was recorded with a synthesizer for Phantom Menace, but they use a female soprano who's doing that angelic singing for Attack of the Clones, which of course we do see when Dooku and Sidious meet up. And to me, what it connects to is the fact that when our heroes are flying into Cloud City in The Empire Strikes Back, it's the first time actually in the original Star Wars that you ever had a choir.
Right.
You hear a very high-pitched soprano female singing as they're approaching Cloud City. And again, it's the explanation is John Williams is telling us that, you know, it's kind of the song of the siren. you know, it's this beautiful place that's inviting and welcomes you in, but it's your own peril that you're following. So to me, it's almost like, okay, you can link that then, you know, because these are not angelic figures by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
To me, it's similar to that Song of the Siren, you know, that they're pulling us into their trap, which is clearly what we hear, you know, when Dooku says the war has begun.
Yes.
Excellent. You know,
everything is going as planned.
So, you know, you have that, but also to me, it also, it's, there's something eerie and mysterious about it as well. Mm-hmm. It's creepy. It's kind of freaky. So I think it's,
yeah.
You know, it works really well. So, absolutely.
And honestly, the statement of the Imperial March that we get here at the end of Attack of the Clones is one of my favorite statements of the Imperial March in all of Star Wars, to be perfectly honest. I love the way it sounds. Obviously, it's not as menacing and as intimidating as what it normally is.
Yeah.
But I love the way that it's done as the clones are loading up onto the ships and taking off from Coruscant. And it obviously shows us where things are heading.
Right. And it's interesting because, think about it, the first time we see the clone troopers basically doing kind of the same thing in the movie, you know, loading onto transports and stuff, is when, you know, Obi-Wan shows up on Kamino there. But it's the droid, the Trade Federation march, the first time we see him, which again is interesting because it's like, why are you using the Trade Federation march? Well, the Trade Federation march was in the, you know, in Phantom Menace, it's the march of the enemy. So to me, it's pointing forward to the fact that while these are the quote unquote good guys for this film, they're actually going to become the villains. And that becomes very apparent now here in this closing track, you know, with Palpatine and the other senators watching the troops, you know, loading up on Coruscant. You know, this is the Empire. The Empire has been formed now, thanks to Jar Jar.
So, hey,
I like Jar Jar now, don't get me wrong, but it's his fault. I mean, he gets manipulated, but it's still his fault.
Well, he's the fall guy. That's for sure. But it's interesting how they sort of repurpose that whole idea of a very upbeat, you know, march style of the Imperial March for Rebels during the first season when they had Empire Day.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah, they did. They sort of repurposed that idea in Rebels, which I liked. But of course, after Across the Stars and the wedding and everything, we go into...
Oh, I'm not done. Sorry.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry. I had a lot of time today, so bear with
Carl's
me.
Carl's got notes.
I got too many, probably. But, you know, that's no, cool. I mean, so we have, obviously, the Imperial March, the formation of the Empire, this huge galactic event taking place with these clones marching onto their ships. The Clone Wars have begun. Yoda has said as much. We know where this is leading us. But then it does. It kind of zooms in. And I think this is what makes George Lucas such a great storyteller, is because he's capable of taking the macro story and telling it through a micro version, right? Mm-hmm. So like the story of Luke Skywalker, it's a single character, but his story is going to affect the galaxy at large. And the same is true in the prequels of Anakin's story. Anakin's personal struggles and you know, journey is going to affect the greater shape of the galaxy. So that's what's so great. George, you know, he does. He starts with this huge macrocosm, you know, of the Empire being formed on Coruscant, and then you have this smaller story, this personal story of Anakin marrying Padme, which is, as we all know, it's a tragic love story, and, you know, it's a secret ceremony. You have a Jedi Knight who's not supposed to have any attachments, certainly not a wife, marrying a senator. Senator's going to have, you know, spouses, but not supposed to be a Jedi. So, you know, there's this. It's, you know, and again, as we all know, if you've listened to the show in the past, I love Across the Stars. It's one of my favorite pieces of music in Star Wars. And it is. It's this beautiful song, but it's a tragic love song. And it's so beautiful. That's how our story is ending now. So you have these two people who fall in love, and they're, you know, taking the risk of getting married. And this love story is going to lead to the downfall of the galaxy at large. So, even though things are being plotted already for the Empire, what's going to actually lead it there is this tragic love story. So,
yeah, exactly. Exactly. We go into the end credit theme, and then, of course, come right back around to Across the Stars, which is everywhere in Attack of the Clones.
It really is.
It's so prevalent.
Sorry.
No, don't be sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, so good. I love that statement of Across the Stars. It's my favorite in all of Star Wars.
Yeah. But you know what's funny, Jason?
What?
I'm sorry. I'm going to do a quick little side point. I remember when the Attack of the Clones Across the Stars music video came out, you know, just mm-hmm. like they did with Duel of the Fates for Phantom Menace. I liked that song more than Duel of the Fates so much. I love Duel of the Fates, but to this day, I just prefer the like love songs and the soft songs of Star Wars. That's just, I don't know why. It's my own disposition, I guess. Mm-hmm. But remember how you told you the stories about how I used to like put my Walkman on and listen to Duel of the Fates and pretend to do the lightsaber duel on my bridge out back in my house? As soon as Across the Stars came out, I always lightsaber dueled to that, though, which was so weird because it's not a fight song. But to me, I don't know. I was kind of like that like kid who's like, no, but, you know, no girls like me when I was like in middle school and stuff. So to me, it was like that. I got that tragic love story. I thought I did. I told myself I did. And I don't know why, like for some reason that had a more emotional weight to it. So I found it easier to fake fight to. So Across the Stars became my Duel of the Fates song for the rest of my lightsaber dueling days.
That is so funny.
No.
But of course, obviously it tells the tragic love story of Anakin and Padme. We've talked about that, but I like the style of Across the Stars because it's definitely modeled after these classic soundtracks that we got with these big romantic scores back in the 50s and that sort of thing. And John Williams is definitely doing an homage to that type of romantic theme from a day gone by in cinema history. But not only is he doing an homage there, but it also fits so well and is so Star Wars and fits the story so perfectly. And it is obviously one of the primary takeaways from Attack of the Clones is this forbidden love story. And yes, we see a lot of the macro view of the galaxy and the Clone Wars beginning and that sort of thing and how Palpatine is shifting things and manipulating things. But the biggest thing that John Williams wants us to remember from this movie is the story of Anakin and Padme.
Right. Yes.
And we get the entire concert suite of Across the Stars. The entire concert suite, which is, you know, 4.5-5 minutes long.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's, you know, you hit on it perfectly there, Jason. It's clear for John Williams, the center of this film, and it's also the middle act of this new three-part act, you know what I mean? You know, the OT had a three-act movement, and now the PT is going to have a three-act movement. The middle act, the emotional weight of this now, you know, new symphony is the story of Anakin's love story. You know, so this tragic love story becomes kind of the focal point of this new saga. And that's why, again, you know, if you listen to Star Wars Oxygen, David Collins does his theme tracker. It's Across the Stars is the second most prevalent theme in any movie. So obviously in the Imperial March is heard, I can't remember the number, but it's heard the most during Empire Strikes Back, but a close second is Across the Stars and Attack of the Clones.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because again, these are both middle movies. Clearly an Empire, John
Williams, dominated by one track.
Yeah. So John Williams is making a statement in Empire, but he's clearly making a statement in Attack of the Clones. The movement of this galaxy, the movement of our story now is caught up in this love theme. And again, it's a tragic love theme. And it really does sound like a tragic love theme. I can't give you all the technical musical reasons as to why that does, but when you hear that, it's definitely a tragic love theme. It's not a "this love is going to go great" type song, you know?
No.
It's like, this is love, but oh crap.
But there's some rocky roads ahead.
Yeah.
And exactly. Not just ice cream.
Oh, good. I lost my love bite, Rocky Road. Jason, you went to Star Wars in concert when it was touring, right?
I did. Yeah. I did.
Do you remember when they played that song, Across the Stars?
I do. I had chills going up and down my spine hearing it live. The only track that affected me more that actually started to make me tear up was Princess Leia's theme. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you why, but it did.
It's so beautiful in a concert. That's why I think
it is. I
cut you off there. Sorry.
It is. But yeah, the only one that affected me more was Princess Leia's theme. But this one, I had chills running down my spine. And of course, you know, the images on screen that they're playing definitely help that out too. Mm-hmm. But it was so great. And I hope we get information about the next Star Wars and concert tour, please. And thank you. I'd love to go see it again.
Yeah. Well, you know, this concert tomorrow night I'm going to. I really hope it's all Star Wars music, even though I know it won't be. I'm sure there's going to be Indiana Jones, Harry Potter, Jaws. Hopefully, I'd love to hear the Jurassic Park theme. I've never heard that live. But I know there's going to be some Force Awakens stuff. But I also hope that we do get, you know, some other stuff as well. I'd love to hear Across the Stars again live. And that's the thing, you know, Across the Stars at that concert, I think I got like teary-eyed a couple times. And surprisingly, the first time was just hearing the opening blast of, you know, the opening theme live in that venue. Mm-hmm. It was just like, wow, this is so cool. But the second time that something that really hit me was Across the Stars. And it is. It's just such a beautiful piece. And it just shows the expertise of John Williams. And again, if you were to listen to Across the Stars and then listen to the, you know, Han and Leia theme from Empire, they're two love themes that it couldn't be more different. To me, Across the Stars, I enjoy it more because there is a little bit more of an epic feel to it, but mm-hmm. it's going to fail. Whereas Han and Leia's does have a sense of concreteness to it. There is a sense of stability. And again, it makes sense. They're older characters. You know, right. not Leia's not significantly older than Anakin and Padme, but Han is. You know, this is mm-hmm. and also this is a girl who's been in, you know, the Senate her whole life and it was a queen. She doesn't have that typical life experience, and then you've got a Jedi, you know, right. who was a slave. So, you know, their understanding of love is going to be much more immature than Han and Leia's.
Exactly. Exactly. But then we get an interesting little medley.
Yes.
To wrap up this. And I had forgotten this, to be perfectly honest. And it's got a neat little blending of Anakin's theme, Across the Stars, and the Imperial March. And I think we're going to play it here, right?
Yeah. Where did you say it starts? I know you...
Right shortly after like 9:30 on the track. So go ahead and
here we go.
Get it up. So that'll be wrapping up Across the Stars and going into this. So right. I'd forgotten about this.
Yeah. Across the Stars ends so beautifully here too. Is that a harp?
Or I think it's a harp. Yeah. Harpsichord, I think, maybe.
Here we go.
I'm getting chills listening to that.
That Imperial March there, is that like a bass there or something?
I think it's a bass.
Okay. It's so like, it can feel it in your chest.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a double bass. I had forgotten about that medley. I don't know why, but it is so perfectly woven together and I love it. Mm-hmm. And now I will definitely, always when I'm listening to the soundtrack, pay attention at the very end of that track and look for that.
yep. You know, I mean, people stick around Marvel movies for those after credit scenes. You should stick around Star Wars movies for the last second of every piece of John Williams music.
Yes, exactly.
But yeah, no, you're right. It is. It is this medley. It's a bleeding of three themes after Across the Stars finishes, we get a very brief hint again at Anakin's theme. And to me, it's pointing back to, again, don't forget where he came from. He mm-hmm. is this innocent, good person, right? Like, we don't want to be hitting you over the head the whole time, like, he's Darth Vader. Also, remember who he was first. I like that. You know, it's taking us back to the anchor of who Anakin was, a good kid with a good heart, an innocent person who, you know, is trying to live out his dreams. But then it bleeds again into this. It doesn't go immediately into the Imperial March this time. So, again, it's just the brilliance of John Williams. And, you know, in The Phantom Menace, it goes from Anakin's theme into the Imperial March, done. In here, though, it goes from Anakin's theme again back into Across the Stars. John Williams must love that piece. You know, it's still a very subtle statement of Across the Stars and then the Imperial March. So to me, it's almost like it's this innocent beginning followed by this tragic love story. So the tragic love story is what leads more directly to that Imperial March.
And as you hear Across the Stars play, you get the Imperial March coming in underneath it. And then Across the Stars fades out and the Imperial March ends it out.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's so good. And I feel horrible for not remembering it until today. That was in there. And I will probably, when we're done talking about this, go back and listen to that portion again. Which astounds me that I forgot about that, because that's my favorite of the prequel movies.
You know, it doesn't surprise me, because I don't think I know I've listened to that whole piece before, but it's been a long time since I've listened to it in its entirety. Mm-hmm. A lot of times with the Star Wars soundtracks, when I'm listening to the last track, I kind of stop it once the credits roll part. You know what I mean? Because it's like, oh, I know the themes are coming. I've already heard them. But again, it's the end of those tracks that you really need to pay attention to, because I think it's almost in those last few moments, those last measures, that John Williams really, really, really just packs it really close in.
Oh, yeah.
And again, if you listen to End of Phantom Menace, it's the innocent boy who becomes this villain, but now it's this innocent boy who, you know, has this tragic love story who becomes this villain. So it's like we have the meat now. We have the meat of what's going to lead to that fall. You know, it's this tragic love story.
So yeah.
If there's a key word today, it's tragic love. Sorry, you're probably sick of hearing that. Before we get into Revenge of the Sith, unfortunately, Revenge of the Sith doesn't do this at the end, because I think John Williams, like all of us Star Wars fans, assumed Revenge of the Sith was going to be the last Star Wars film we'd ever see. So again, this, and we'll talk about it here in a minute, but the end of this particular soundtrack goes a very different way. And it's also the longest track. It's 13 minutes long. You know, it's the longest amount of time.
It's the biggest amount of music post credits.
Exactly. Thank you, Jason.
And I mean, like everyone, he's sort of paying homage to everything that has come before with this, because, you know, everyone, including George Lucas at the time, I'm sure, thought this is it. We're done. We're wrapping this up. And so John Williams, knowing it's the last, in addition to getting some music from Revenge of the Sith in there, also hits some great themes that, you know, from the previous movies that he wants to make sure get their due one final time. But of course it starts off with, you know, A New Hope, which is a mixture of Leia's theme and the Force theme, as we see Bail take Leia back to Alderaan and Obi-Wan take Luke back to Tatooine.
You know, and you're absolutely right, Jason, that this is it's a bringing together of two character themes. It's actually not the Force theme, it's Luke's theme.
Yeah,
in a sense, because Luke never officially has a theme, but in a sense his theme is the main theme of Star Wars.
Right.
You know, which is carried over from A New Hope. But it is so cool this song begins. I mean, the title of the track is A New Hope, but you know, you get to hear Leia's theme, which, like you said, is a beautiful piece of music.
Yeah.
And and then it goes right into Luke's theme. And again, it's so perfect visually. You know, that closing montage in Revenge of the Sith is probably my favorite montage closing in Star Wars. because the music and the imagery matches so perfectly. And you do, you get the story, you know, this theme of Leia's into Luke's, and it's very clear these are our new hopes now. everything has gone to Mustafar in this movie.
Yep.
Literally and figuratively. And here we have these two new characters who are the lasting hope. And right before those end credits roll, we close with, I call it the binary sunset theme. Because yes, it is, it's the Force theme, but again, it's almost the exact same type of piece as we got in A New Hope when Luke's looking at the sunset. Now it's Luke being held by Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru. And it's, again, it lifts your spirits to the fact that things are going to be okay. We're kind of waiting for hope's fulfillment, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, of course, we go into the credits, and it jumps right back into Princess Leia's theme.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think John Williams must really like that piece of music, because it also shows up in A New Hope, but we'll get to that in a minute. Maybe. We'll see how long
Most likely next week.
Most likely next week. But it goes into Princess Leia's theme, which I love. And I like the fact that we get it back here again, because we really do get – not only is this sort of being a greatest hits almost for John Williams, it's also connecting the two trilogies. And it's like, yes, we saw Leia born here. We had her theme here. And then we're also reminding you, yes, she's going to move forward here, going on into the next trilogy. And then that goes into Battle of the Heroes, which is the big standout, tragic, epic piece of music from Revenge of the Sith.
Right. You know, and like we were saying earlier, it's a much more personal piece of music than, you know, than the Duel of the Fates was.
Right.
I love these violins. And of course, we're going to bring the choir back in.
And while this is a great battle piece of music for the film, it's so much sadder than Duel of the Fates was. Duel of the Fates is, you know, pitched battle versus good and evil, and this is, it's almost like it's an eternal sort of thing. Battle of the Heroes is so, while epic and action-packed, is also so sad. Which is fitting because of what it really means. Because, you know, Battle of the Heroes, mainly meaning Anakin and Obi-Wan. And it centers in on them. Anakin's fall to the dark side and the destruction of this brotherhood between these two characters. And it is so integral to not only the story of Revenge of the Sith, but the story of the Star Wars saga, because Obi-Wan doesn't really like talking about Anakin and Darth Vader as the same person moving forward. And you can see just how much what happens in Revenge of the Sith hurts Obi-Wan. And it's not until Return of the Jedi where he actually talks about Anakin and Darth Vader as the same person again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point. And Battle of the Heroes is actually, Revenge of the Sith, oddly, has the least amount of themes in its closing track. And again, like we were saying earlier, I think it's because there was the expectation that this was the last Star Wars film.
Yeah.
So they kind of just cram it with different stuff that doesn't necessarily correlate to Revenge of the Sith as directly as the other, you know, closing pieces of music does.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the music that they do choose to put in here still fits.
Yes.
So yeah, we go from the tragic Battle of the Heroes, which is a beautiful piece of music, and immediately then it's this really odd transition. It goes from Battle of the Heroes to the Throne Room March from A New Hope. So you have this tragic story and then this awesome pump up music. But the Throne Room March is a little bit different in the Revenge of the Sith soundtrack.
It's a bit more stretched out, isn't it? It's not quite as the tempo is slower, isn't right. it?
Yeah, I'm trying. Give me 1 second. Oops, wrong song. That's why I'm not getting it. Hold on. Here we go. Yeah, a lot slower. It's slower, but it almost has like a heavier sound
to it.
There's a lot more percussion, I think. And again, I love those staccato notes. I'm right in saying staccato.
I believe you. I believe that's correct.
Kind of like that, like choppy or like dum dum
yes.
dum. You know?
Yes, that's staccato.
Okay.
Legato is when they all blend together. Staccato is when they're very individual and, you know, note.
And by the way, Jason knows what he's talking about because he is a real musician. So,
vaguely familiar, at least. But yes, and it is a very more. That's because that's a proper English there. It is a very interesting take on the throne room theme because it is slower. It's more drawn out, and it's like you said, heavier. And it's interesting that he decided to play it that way. And it's definitely, obviously, a new recording and not one that's just stretched out. So it was very deliberate to do it that way. And I like it. I'm not entirely certain what that whole all signifies. Maybe it just sounds better flowing from
Battle of the Heroes
mm-hmm. and then into Across the Stars because that's what comes next. So maybe it just flows better if it's not quite as quick and upbeat. So
yeah. So, yeah, then bring it into Across Stars again.
Yes.
Thank you, JW. But yeah, I mean, and again, it's kind of recapsulating. And then he again returns to the Force theme
mm-hmm.
And ends it with another movement of the throne room.
Yes.
But kind of the B side of it, you know, not that triumphant part.
Right.
And to me, the reason I think that this track is ending this way, again, is it's kind of a triumphant way of saying our saga has been told. You know, the story is complete. Yeah. And at the end of the day, even though you just went through hell watching this movie, watching everything fall apart, don't forget that the good defeats the evil, right? Like that good will triumph in the end, and we will have that victory march once again.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Oh, man. There's so much packed into these closing credit pieces of music.
That we just don't have time to do the original
trilogy.
We
don't have time to do it all.
As we predicted.
Because we've got 4 more movies, and we've been going for quite some time. Yes. It's about 40 minutes now, at least. So yeah. 40, 45 minutes. So we're going to go ahead and slip one of your Larian inquiries in here, and then we'll come back to this next week.
Yes. Which I'm excited about because I've already done my homework.
Yes.
It's like that great time when your teacher screwed up and was like, oh, I forgot that a homework actually isn't due till next week. And you're like, yes, I can watch another Star Wars movie tonight. Or listening to some closing tracks from John Williams.
There you go.
But yes, we still have plenty of Larian inquiries because we suck at getting to them. But yeah, lay it on us, Jason.
All right. So, of course, again, these are emails that we got after Force Awakens came out, and we promised you we would read them all. And so we're still working through them. We will get through all of these emails. Stephen Holler says, overall, the movie, Force Awakens, hit all the notes. Felt like a Star Wars film, and I feel J.J. and co. nailed it. Be it the chills that I got when Han and Chewie came home, to the feels when Rey sat down in the cockpit with the fuzzball as her co-pilot. There were so many little nods and moments that struck the right chords. I was initially worried when they were bringing the old guard back that something wouldn't click and they would lose a little luster, specifically Solo. It seems that they all jumped back into the roles and they felt right. This is Solo's magnum opus and he went out on top. Luke didn't have a spoken word but visually conveyed everything we needed. He's all got one more paragraph. Did you want to say anything about that paragraph before I finish it up?
I agree. Han's the man.
Han is the man. And I like how he says that it's Han's magnum opus. This is his culmination.
Yeah. And it does, you know, because Harrison Ford was very evident, you know, he wanted Han Solo's character to lend to the emotional weight of these films, and he perfectly does that in Force Awakens.
Yes, yes. There is not anyone who doesn't have an emotion after what happens with Han Solo, one way or the other.
Right.
Anyway, he continues on and says, Adam Driver did a great job with Kylo/Ben. I'm not going to lie. I was worried in the scene he takes his mask off. He was a bit awkward and seemed somewhat forced. Then as the scenes went on, as I saw the movie again, he really does portray the raw, petulant child as well as possible. The raw emotion, the desire to emulate his grandfather, who it seems he may or may not understand completely, most likely influenced by Snoke, even his raw style of lightsaber use contrasted with his potential and power in the Force are really brought forward. The Cousins War, as he says in quotes, will be something to behold moving forward. Of course, referring to Kylo and Rey.
Right. And I hope he's right. I'd really still hope that Rey is Luke's daughter, but I'm starting to doubt that.
Yeah, that may not be the case based on some things JJ is saying and just based on some of the ideas that may be moving forward. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. I think my fear is that Disney owns it now and they're going to want episode 20, 30, and 25, 35, and 45 someday. So I don't know. They're supposed to be the story of the Skywalkers. Make it relevant, people. That's all I'll say. completely agree that Adam Driver is one of the highlights, you know, and now that this movie has been out for about just shy of 6 months,
mm-hmm.
It's still shy of 5 months. So we can say it's 5 months old.
Yes.
You know, watching this at home quite a few times already now, since it came out on Blu-ray, I'll say it again, like Kylo Ren to me is he's my favorite on-screen villain, really. Except, I think I prefer Vader and Empire to Kylo Ren. But I like him more than Vader and A New Hope, at least. And I think he's better than every prequel villain. But yeah, you're absolutely right. He does a great job of portraying kind of this tortured young man who emulates a psycho.
Yeah.
So, Episode 7 leaves you with more questions than answers, and one of them is what went wrong with Ben. And I'm going to slip this in right now without giving any spoilers, but I'm currently reading about halfway through Bloodline by Claudia Gray in the new canon, the story of Leia. And for me, anyway, this is by far the best book in the new canon except for Lords of the Sith. Granted, I haven't read Tarkin, so I don't know. I don't have anything to say about that. But I couldn't finish A New Dawn. I couldn't finish Heir to the Jedi. I didn't finish Dark Disciple. All three of them I just didn't care for. Heir to the Jedi, I hated. A New Dawn was meh. And Dark Disciple was good. I guess I just got bored. But Leia, this Bloodline book is so stinking good. And all I will say is Ben is talked about, not a great deal. Again, I don't think we're gonna get any huge spoilers. Han is talked about, Chewie's talked about, and Luke, they're all mentioned. And you definitely get a very good sense of what's going on. And this book takes place 6 years before Force Awakens. It does a great job of showing you what's going on. If you haven't read it, I highly, highly, highly recommend it. And Jason, as soon as you're done reading it, we're totally doing a show on it.
Oh yeah. Oh, yes, we will. I haven't started it yet. I've got to finish another book first, but it's next on my list. Would you say that Bloodline is must-read material?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay,
then. Because I think – and it's just such a well-written book. I just finished listening to Star Wars Crucible as an audiobook in my car last week because a friend of mine mentioned how great the epilogue was. And I will say that while the story was very meh, the epilogue was amazing. And it was a great way to end the Legend series. Mm-hmm. But again, I'm reading Bloodline. I listened to Crucible. So that's two very different ways of taking in a book. But
right.
I will say, and again, this was a huge critique of mine all along towards the end of the Legend series, is I think the writing's just really bad. I'm not like an English major or anything and have a great understanding of literature, but I just thought they were really poorly written books. You couldn't tell any author's difference. You know, to me, they all wrote the same. It didn't matter who was writing the stories. They were all kind of the same boring plot that took forever to unravel. They were all just big mystery stories. not very Star Wars-y, in my opinion. And I don't mean to like crap on the Legends. I loved a lot of Legends, but I think towards the end, it really fizzled out. And I think somebody like Claudia Gray, like, she really does stand out as an incredible author. I put her up there with Matt Stover. It's a great book. Yeah, and I'm enjoying it so much. My friend just lent me Lost Stars, which I really didn't have any interest in reading. But he's like, yeah, she writes a good book. And it's a YA novel, so it's for younger people. But he said it's a pretty good story as well. So as soon as I finish Bloodline, I'm jumping into Lost Stars. See if I can find them. Oh, man, slay me.
I feel like you're going to be playing Across the Stars while listening to Lost Stars.
Just on loop, yeah.
There you go. There you go. All right.
Oh, man. This was so fun. I obviously, you know what's coming next week, folks.
Yes, you know what's coming next. We're going to hit the original trilogy and Force Awakens as far as our closing tracks. I think we'll be able to get through that in about as much time as it took us to get through the prequels, because there's not too terribly much to talk about with A New Hope. But it's – oh, man. I'm so excited that we get to talk even more about these pieces of music and what they mean and how they encapsulate the story thus far.
Absolutely.
Idea. So
now,
but
I was going to ask you, are we going to give them our poll though? I think
we should.
I think we should, because it'll be a lot of fun to play with in the next episode, Jason.
Exactly. And oh, I'm so excited to hear what you guys think about this. In keeping with the musical theme of things, we want to know what your favorite musical theme in Star Wars is. This can encapsulate all seven of these films. If you want to throw in something from the Clone Wars, go ahead. But I want to know character themes. So it has to be something like, you know, Anakin's theme, Leia's theme, Yoda's theme, Rey's theme, something like that.
The Force theme? Does that count?
The Force theme, okay. Yeah. If it's got something like theme in it, you know, yes. Yeah, go ahead. Okay. Throw it in there.
So not like the asteroid chase.
No, not the asteroid chase. And as much as I love them, Duel of the Fates and Battle of the Heroes, not themes.
Good.
Across the Stars is, that's Anakin and Padme's love theme. But Battle of the Heroes, Across the Stars, not a theme.
Jason, so, is this allowed? This is my theme.
Oh, man. But I want to hear your guys' thoughts on this. What is your favorite character theme, musical theme in Star Wars? And we're going to keep this as broad as possible. We want to hear all your answers. I'm excited about this one. So, Carl, if they want to weigh in on this theme or weigh in on our thoughts on the end tracks thus far, where can they do that?
Well, they can do that on Facebook, facebook.com/WampusLair podcast. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/WampusLair. shoot us an email at wampuslerpodcast@gmail.com. And please don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on the iTunes store. I never say this and I always forget. Thank God for Riley Blanton. but if you haven't done this yet, please be sure to subscribe to our podcast through the iTunes store so that you can just, you know, sometimes we're pretty infrequent each which day of the week we get the show up. So that way it'll just do the work for you by giving you the show. So
exactly.
If you haven't done that yet, and also ask you again, if you have a minute to write a review for us in the iTunes store, let us know what you think. Always love to hear what other people are thinking about our show.
We got one about a week ago, and I forget who put it up there, but thank you for that. But yeah, anything else, Carl, before we wrap up this episode?
Man, I got to go get to work. Got some lost stars.
Lost stars to find. All right. Well, that will wrap up this episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This has been episode number 182, Musical Finales, Part 1. For Carl, I'm Jason, and we will see you next time here in the Wampa's Lair.